next presenter is Pierre Tuck. Pierre is an undergraduate student in both the Global Food Security Program and the Agriculture and Environmental Sciences Program at McGill University. And his talk is going to be about methods, basically, or possible methods to solve food security in a marginalized urban population.
There we go. Okay, so good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for having me there today. My name is Pierre. I study global food security and agricultural sciences at McGill. And today I'm going to be speaking on behalf of Ms. Allison Walker from the Department of Nutrition at McGill on the theme of collective gardens and their impact on food security. So the food insecurity status in Canada is known, I presume, by a lot of people in this room, but just as a reminder, food insecurity affects 1 in 8 Canadians, and most predominantly people living in the lower bracket income. So that includes single mothers, people who rent, and also people who live in social assistance. And there's currently a gap of knowledge relating to community gardens and collective gardens and their efficiency towards combating food insecurity. In fact, there's only one study that we have shown that shows a direct improvement of food security after garden participation. So from the scientific evidence that we have now, which again is really low, we find that there are many benefits associated with with collective gardens. People like to go to these gardens because it provides them easily with fresh food, with cheap food, with food that they want to eat, and food that they can share. And people might not participate in those gardens for also many reasons. For example, the garden might be too far for them. Maybe the garden doesn't grow exactly the vegetables that they want, or simply sometimes the people are not aware that such a garden exists. So our objective was to further explore these perceived barriers and benefits from collective gardens. And we also wanted to determine if there was a correlation between garden participation and food security, as well as garden participation and compliance with the Canadian Food Guide. So in order to do this, we facilitated the development of a collective garden in the peri-urban area of Pointe-Claire in the West Island. It was around a low housing complex where approximately 150 people lived. So basically, we started the garden. We invited the residents to participate in the garden and to participate in its maintenance. And while the garden was running, we invited the residents to answer a short questionnaire. And the questionnaire was divided into two categories. In the first category, we asked the residents about if they were going to participate in the garden, and if so, for what reason, if not, for what reasons. We asked them about their demographic information, and also we asked them to evaluate their own socioeconomic status according to the MacArthur scale of subjective socioeconomic status. And the second category was related to their eating practices. We wanted the residents to tell us to evaluate their own diet and to tell us what they were eating and in what quantity. So these are examples of the questions that we used, that we asked to the residents, and how we use these questions to assess food security. For example, for the quantity of for food security in terms of quantity, we would ask the people if there was any instance in the last year in which they didn't have enough food to eat. So the people who answered that this never happened was classified as food secure. And the rest of the people who answered that it happened a few times, half of the time or most of the time, were labeled as being food insecure. And in terms of quality of food, we would ask people to evaluate their diet, to give a statement about their diet. For the people who informed us that they always have enough food to eat and always the right kind of food that they wanted to eat, those people were perceived as food secure. And people who were perceived as food insecure were the people who would answer anything else, basically. People, for example, that would have enough quantity of food, but not the food, the right kind of foods for their needs. So with this survey, we were able to dress a small portrait of the population in this housing complex. I want to bring your attention towards the non-garden participants and towards four specific points. First of all, you can see that almost half of the people who did not participate were living in the housing complex for less than a year. So this suggests that there's a really high turnover rate in the area. Also, these people rated their socioeconomic status as being low, and they're more prone to go to fast food restaurants. And interestingly, those people are the ones who take public transportation, who walk to go to their grocery store. The people who participated in the collective garden had access to a car, and they did not rate their socioeconomic status as being low. So in terms of benefits and constraints, those results are pretty much agree with what we can see in the literature. People appreciated the fact that the garden was really available for them. It was right next to most of the buildings, and they liked the fact that it provided them with convenient food and fresh food. And they also liked the fact that gardening is a social activity that they can do with their kids and neighbors. And for the constraints, we found that time was really the most limiting factor. Almost half of the respondents said that they didn't have enough time to go to the garden. And the rest of the people said that they were working, which is kind of similar, basically. We were also able to draw some determinants and associations for food security. And here, again, it pretty much agrees with what we've seen in the literature so far. We can see that in terms of quantity, food security was decreasing with people who thought that the fresh fruits and vegetables were of higher cost. And we found a decreasing association with single female-led household and people who had difficulty with food access, so people who didn't have a car, for instance. And it was positively associated with no binge drinking, so if you don't buy alcohol, you have more money to buy food. And people who consume breakfast had higher food security. In terms of quality, it was also decreasing with higher costs of fresh fruits and vegetables. And people who perceived themselves as having a low socioeconomic status were less food secure in terms of quality. And food security in terms of quality was increasing with the consumption of breakfast and snacks. So this, we pretty much knew all of that. What was interesting was the garden participation in compliance with the Canadian Food Guide. We found that what was driving garden participation was excellent or very good self-perceived eating habits. So in other words, when you think that you eat well, you're going to participate in the garden. And same thing for compliance with the Canadian Food Guide. It was positively associated with excellent or very good self-perceived health. So if you think you're healthy, you're going to follow the Canadian Food Guide. And we found that there was no correlation between garden participation and the compliance with the Canadian Food Guide overall. So the conclusions that we can draw from this is that time is really a big limiting factor for collective garden participation. If you are a single mother or you're a person with low income and you work 60 hours a week, a collective garden won't help you to be more food secure. And we also found that the compliance with the Canadian Food Guide is related with your attitude. You need to think that you eat well and you need to think that you're healthy to part. You have more chances to comply with the Canadian Food Guide if you have those kind of attitudes. And finally, the areas of high turnover, which was the case for a case study, contribute to low garden participation, which is logical. If you move to an apartment and you'll be staying there for 1 year and you know it, you won't help maintain a community garden or a collective garden that you won't benefit from at the end of the day. So the take-home message is that collective gardens still have a lot to do to face the challenges and to reach the people most in need for food security. It does because it requires a time commitment, and time is a luxury that many food insecure people don't have. So this results in inequalities among the types of individuals who participate in those gardens, and the people who participate may not be the people that you want to reach. So that was it for my presentation. Just before leaving, I want to thank Dr. Begg and Dr. Chris Koski for their support through the project, and thank you for listening.